Board member for Broadleaf Writers Association, and I'm here today to talk with Jessie Latimer. She is a Broadleaf member. She has been a guest at our conference, and she is an upcoming debut author. Thanks for talking with me today, Jessie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
So your debut novel, Again Behold the Stars, is almost ready to launch. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it comes out 2 weeks from tomorrow, August 11th, which is unbelievable. But it is a young adult fantasy. If you were going to get really into the weeds, I would call it a meta fantasy. But young adult fantasy would be the broad genre. And it follows 17-year-old Rigby Rhymes, who travels inside of her favorite book and tries to change the ending, only to accidentally reveal to the villain that he's a fictional character fated to die at the end. And obviously, he's not happy about that. She ends up teaming up with the villain, and he has to try to find a way to become a hero to change his fate and not die at the end.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I could see where it would cause an existential crisis to suddenly find out that not only are you the official bad guy, but your time is limited.
Yes, yeah, he freaks out, and I think it's totally justified. I love him.
So, where did you get your inspiration for the title?
So, the line Again Behold the Stars is a translation of a line from the end of Dante's Inferno. And Inferno was a big source of inspiration for me as I wrote this book. The kind of mega villains, because of course our villain ends up becoming a good guy by the end. So our true villains in this story, yeah, don't tell anybody. Our true villains in this story are these embodiments of the seven deadly sins who roam around the universe on their motorcycles. They are a motorcycle gang with matching leather jackets, and they are basically seeking to destroy all happy endings in the universe, real and fictional. So
Oh.
I've obviously, with the Seven Deadly Sins, pulled a lot of inspiration from Dante's Inferno. And I just love that line at the end of Inferno when Dante and Virgil are coming up out of hell. They've been surrounded by all of this darkness and all of this hopelessness, almost to the point that they've forgotten that the real world exists and that the light above exists. And they finally come up out of hell and they can see the stars again. They can see the sun about to rise. And I think the actual, fancier translation is "Thence we came forth to re-behold the stars," but it's very
That's a hard
frequently,
title.
yeah, that wasn't really catchy for the teens. So another more modern translation is "Again behold the stars," and I just love that line because with my characters, especially this villain who becomes a hero, he is surrounded by what feels like just overwhelming darkness and overwhelming odds, and it feels so hopeless. But then, a spoiler alert, it ends pretty decently for him. And he comes up out of that darkness. And I just love that the sense that that line invokes of remembering that light is real and remembering that the light will win in the end. So, yeah, there's a big backstory to the title that people always ask about because it is kind of an interesting one.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love it. I love Dante's Inferno. So I think I know the answer to this, given some of your other answers, but who was your favorite character in your novel? And I know it's like a horrible thing to ask any
Yes,
author, but I'm
that's a mean
asking it.
question.
Very rude, but I'm asking it.
I do love the villain. His name is Wick. So he's the fictional villain who Rigby accidentally reels, "Hey, you're fictional and you're gonna die at the end." And I just have a soft spot for him because the odds are so stacked against him. Everybody loves an underdog. I love an underdog,
Yeah.
and I love his journey of course, like finding out that this ter I mean, how would you feel if you found out that your whole life had been written for you, and that you had done some terrible things, but that it hadn't even been in your control, and you were supposed to do more terrible things and you had to fight to not do them. So I just have a soft spot for him, and I just love his journey of course, anger and like denial at first of realizing this is his existence. to going to, okay, well, I'm going to fight this as hard as I can. And even if it costs me everything, even if it costs me my life, I'm not going to be this person that I was written to be. I'm not going to be the person that everybody says I have to be just because that's what others are expecting of me. So definitely have a soft spot for him.
I like it. So I love because this could have gone differently for him. Instead of kind of going on that journey, he could have been like, "All right, fine. I'm the bad guy then." And it could have gotten a lot worse.
Well, it's interesting because the inverse also happens in the book. So the fictional hero of the original story that Rigby kind of breaks into, his name is Chance Golden, and he is this stereotypical perfect fictional man, right?
The Golden Boy,
Literally,
quite
yes, that's
literally.
the obvious name. And when things kind of go off the rails and the characters stop having to follow the plot of the story, Chance is like very happy to find out that he is the hero of this story. He's like, well, of course I am.
Well,
Who
yeah.
else would it be? But then as things start to actually be challenging for the first time in his life, and Chance is faced with truly having to be good and not just having goodness thrust upon him, he kind of starts to realize he's not a hero after all. He starts to become a little bit of
Oh.
an anti-hero. And I kind of enjoy that inverse situation. So I like both of those characters a lot and the journeys that they go on.
I love this theme of like fate, but then anti-fate, you know,
Yeah.
where they had to be the certain way, but then they didn't, and kind of
Yeah.
that chaos that that would cause. That's
Yep.
really cool.
To any of us.
So where did you start on this writing journey? Because you've been really going through this story for a while now, and you've gone on quite a almost the same epic adventure as your characters.
Oh my gosh, you are not kidding. So the first draft of this book, I actually started writing when I was 16 years old. I was a junior in high school. So
Oh,
now
wow.
I'm 28 when the book is coming out in 2 weeks. And so it will literally have been a journey of 12 years. So to like young writers who might be watching this, everybody tells you, oh, you'll never publish the stuff that you wrote when you were young and, let those stories go. I say if you have a story that's really sticking with you, just keep rewriting it until you're a good enough writer to get it published because this is the story that's been with me that whole time. Anyway, that was a rabbit trail. But
No,
the
I
initial
love it.
inspiration for this book, as a younger kid, you wouldn't know it now, but I was shyer on the shyer side when I was a young kid. But I loved reading. I always loved reading. And it was, I think, as it is for many people, a little bit of an escape sometimes. When I felt uncomfortable in social situations, and I would daydream constantly about what it would be like to actually get inside of one of the books that I was reading. What would I do? What would I say to the fictional characters? When we read Little House on the Prairie in school, I so desperately was like, I have to get inside of this book and give Laura Ingalls a bag of Cheetos because Cheetos were my favorite, and I felt so bad for her that they didn't exist back then, and I was like, this would blow her mind. So it was really from those daydreams that was the first inspiration for the book idea.
I love that daydreaming about Cheetos took you to
Oh.
writing this novel.
Yes, I know. It has been a long and very strange journey.
Well, so any journey that long, and you kind of mentioned, you know, you got to keep rewriting it. And I know that you have had to overcome a lot of hurdles to finally get this book out in the world. And that can be so, it's such a deterrent for a lot of writers. They just give up eventually because it can be hard. And you've persevered over a decade. So what are some of the hurdles that you ran into, and how did you overcome those?
There were a lot. I would need to think back on that.
You could probably list, you know,
Yeah,
more than every circle of hell, like.
I can at least definitely tell you three or four off the top of my head. But one was I wanted to do something kind of different and interesting with the structure of this book, which will become very obvious as soon as you start reading it from the first page. I love books that have unique structure, unique narration. And one of the things that I really wanted to do with this book was have an alternate ending. almost like a choose your own adventure situation. Sorry, this is a bit of a spoiler, but
No, let's
not
go.
too
I'm invested.
And that was really hard. I feel like I had this ambition to do this really challenging structure, but when I started trying to write it, this is probably part of why it took me so many years to figure it out, just because that's an extremely difficult thing to pull off and have it work and have it be fun to read and a good, understandable experience for the reader where they're following everything. So that was one. The way I overcame that was just time, honestly, just spending so much time thinking about it. I had a giant mirror at the time when I was really cracking down on this problem. My husband and I lived in an apartment with a massive mirror that covered the entire bathroom wall. And I would climb up on the sink with an Expo marker and draw the timeline over and over and just rearrange things because you could erase, it was like a dry
Wow.
erase board. And just so many iterations of trying to make things work. So really it was that bathroom mirror that eventually did it for me. And then
That might be the
another.
first time I've ever heard of a bathroom mirror being used as a writer tool. I love it.
Listen, you do what you gotta do when you don't have a dry erase board. Then another hurdle was when I first started querying and I was trying to get an agent initially, the original draft of this book was 126,000 words for a debut young adult novel, which is like not acceptable in the industry unless,
Little too thick, yeah.
yes, a little too chunky unless you're like already famous and people, have an investment in you as a writer. 99% of the time, that is far too long and like far outside of the accepted range for querying to agents in that genre. And
What is the
every
acceptable range there? Just to let us know.
that is a really good question. I probably should have looked that up. I
I
managed
think
to
it's
come
like 70 to 90,000, isn't it?
I think you're right. And I think it is 70 to 90. I know mine still ended up being the tiniest smidge above the recommended range because it's 94,000 now. But
Okay,
people,
that's close.
but it has an alternate ending. So because of that extra chunk at the end, I think people were a bit more understanding.
So you were able to keep the alternate ending thing.
Yes, yes.
That's
But in order
awesome.
to get it to a point where any agent would take it seriously, I had to cut literally 100 pages of material. And that was so difficult. I didn't
Ouch.
know if I could do it and keep the story intact. Now I know it was always meant to be this way because the story is tighter than ever. And I'm really proud of the final version. But it was so challenging and so hard emotionally to just force myself to cut those things, that weren't 100% vital. And then the final hurdle, I would say, was once I did get an agent and we were on sub with the book. The book was on sub for 16 or 17 months with publishers, which is quite a long time. I think oftentimes what you hear is that once a book has been on sub for about that long, sometimes they do die on sub. Nothing ends up happening with them. You got to write something else for your agent to send out. That's not the story all the time. Sometimes you hear things being out there for years and then finally someone picks it up. But I feel like I was at a point where I was starting to have to come to terms with, okay, this book might die on sub, and just the emotional, oh, we've come so far, and now, like, what if nothing happens with it? And truly, there's not really a fix for that except keep working on something else. That's when I started writing my next book so that I did not feel like every single hope that I had as a writer was attached to this book. And then, of course, it did eventually get picked up. I think some of the problem that we had with finding a publisher, a lot of these publishers really liked the voice and the style and the story, but a lot of people felt that it was between genres because it's a little bit of an odd book in many ways. Like there are these religious elements, but it's not like an overtly religious or Christian book. It's just that when you have the seven deadly sins and you have like an angel appearing to someone, people are automatically going to think certain things, but then Christian publishers a lot of times were like, this is crazy, you know what I mean? It's like
Yeah,
too
not
much.
really on that. I wouldn't have thought that genre at all.
Exactly. So I think a lot of publishers felt they weren't sure how to position it, even if they liked it and they liked the voice of it. But yeah, I would say the best cure for that is to just keep working on something else in the meantime.
You know, I think too, we're seeing more and more of those kind of cross-genre books, or maybe books that don't cleanly fit in one genre or another, which does make it tricky when you're a publisher or when you're trying to put the on a bookshelf at a bookstore. But I think readers are really invested in that because it gives them a mix of some of the familiarity from multiple genres, and they won't get so maybe bored with seeing the same things over and over again. So, you know, there's pluses to
That.
having that kind of work.
And that's what I like to read are interesting things that kind of blur the lines between categories. So I'm with you. I think there is an audience for it, and the audience is me. But I think other people are into it too. So I appreciate that.
Well, you know, there's a lot of wisdom in the saying, you know, write what you want to read, because then you get excited for it, and that comes through, and you'll attract your readership. You'll attract more readers like you.
That's
So,
right.
now you and I have both been in Broadleaf and around Zach Steele quite a bit, and we have both heard him say, I could probably say this in my sleep, that writing is a solitary act, but we don't have to go it alone. And that to me has resonated on so many levels. It's probably one of the reasons why I've enjoyed being part of Broadleaf and connecting with people, because it did make me feel less alone. How has that networking and community benefited you as you went on this 12-year epic adventure to get your book published?
Oh my goodness, there are so many ways I could answer this question and so many people I could point to, because that this is why if you ever read my book, the acknowledgments are like 87 million pages long, because there are so many people for me to acknowledge. Like, I really would not be in the position I'm in without my writing community and just life community. But to talk specifically about a few people, I would say Broadleaf has been an amazing source of community for me. When I first attended, it was when I was a querying author. That was my first writing conference ever. And then a year or so later, I ran into Zach at, I think it was at an author event at Reinhardt, I want to say. And I had not spoken to him before, but I was like, hey, I think you ran this conference that I attended. And long story short, the advice that I got there resulted in me getting an agent. So thank you. And he was like, well, why don't you come speak at Broadleaf? So then I got kind of replugged into the Broadleaf community, which has just been so sweet because everyone is so supportive. Everybody is like very willing to share your stuff on social media and like blast this out to more people than would ordinarily be putting eyes on my book. So I'm very, very thankful for that and that sense of community. I also think I'm very, very blessed with my agent because she is very intentional. Her name is Kristen Tourette. I just love her. She's been on panels at Broadleaf before, but she is so intentional to build a team of clients and really like get us connected with each other, whether that's over social media or Slack, and help us organize being beta readers for each other, helping us like find ways we can support each other on social media. So many of us have become actual friends online and in real life, and it doesn't feel like, I think oftentimes in the arts, people can start to feel like it's this breakneck competition and, you know, you can't trust anybody because everybody's competing against one another. But it is so nice to have this community that of people that I can call or voice memo and say, hey, I'm really stuck here. I loved your book. You know, what would you do in this situation? And get some really solid advice. So I'm really thankful to her for fostering that community. That has really helped me as I've been editing my second book because there's more romance in that book. And I have not written very much romance in the past, but a lot of these gals have. And they've been able to give me some really good pointers on making things not awkward. So yeah, I think I have just been especially blessed with the amount of people who are intentional to build community like that in my life.
Give us a shout out for the agency that Kristen Tourette is with, and then the publisher that ultimately picked your book up.
Oh, yes. Okay. So Kristen is with Martin Literary Management. They just changed their name because it became a co-owned agency. I want to
Okay.
say it's like MLMN now. There's another letter in there, but it was Martin Literary. Now there's another last name in there somewhere. This was really recent. That's why I can't remember it. And then the publisher that is publishing my book in print and ebook is Quill and Flame Publishing House. They have been amazing to work with. I love them. And it also was picked up by Tantor Audio for an audiobook deal. So it will also be available in audiobook form come this November.
I have two, kind of a two-part question, and they're both about
Sure.
advice. So you'd mentioned earlier that, you were still in the querying process when you really kind of dipped your toe into Broadleaf. I'm curious, what advice would you wish you had known when you started querying, like specifically the querying process?
Don't write a 126,000 word Yucatan. Okay, I'm kind of joking with that one because I wouldn't take it back. I don't think words that you write are ever wasted. I think even if you end up deleting them or, hiding them in a folder and nothing ever happens to them, I think they're all contributing to the background of the story and to making you a better writer. So I wouldn't actually take it back, but moving forward, and just for people who are coming into writing for the first time, I would say if you want to traditionally publish, especially, please look up the genre guidelines for word count, and other things like that, so that you're not automatically excluding yourself from getting an agent or finding a traditional publisher if you want that by having a severely like way out there word count or way under word count that's going to automatically make agents not consider your book. Unfortunately, that's just the reality of the industry most of the time. So I would definitely tell myself, hey, maybe you should look up how the publishing world actually works, and not just assume that they're going to want this like 500 page book from this no-name person. And I would
I
also
think
say, oh, go ahead.
I think there is something to be said for having that extra material. Maybe it didn't make it into the book, and of course you want to avoid any major crazy spoilers that would ruin the book for anybody, but there's probably some nuggets in there that you can pull out as little short stories or Easter eggs or something that you can use as part of the marketing for the book itself. So that's just one idea for how you can maybe not completely lose all of those pages that you had to put aside.
Yeah, I think it there is that. Like, I could definitely do that with newsletter subscribers, and it also just helped me get to know those characters 100 pages better than I used to. And probably the other piece of advice I would give myself with querying is don't be afraid of the weirdness of your book or the quirks of it. If those are things that you love, you can push those things as strengths. Say, hey, this is what I did and I'm proud of it. You don't need to try to like minimize that, because the right agent is going to look at those weird parts about your book and be like, oh my gosh, this is my dream book. Like Marcus Zusak narrating his book with death. You know what I'm saying? But that's the best part of that book. That's what you remember about the book thief is this crazy, super unique narration. So I would say if there's something you love about your book, even if it's atypical, just be proud of what it is and share it for what it is, and the right person will connect with that and want it.
I absolutely love that. I love it. So, what advice would now you give to that 16-year-old that was just starting out with this story? What did she need to hear?
I would say, number one, get connected to a writing community earlier because I think that would have encouraged me so much as a teen writer. And I think I would have learned a lot faster rather than just being on my own with no one to like read over the things I was writing or critique them. I finally started to grow so much as a writer and have my skill level get closer to my ambition level once I got into college and into some creative writing classes and could really get feedback on my work. So I would say, even if it's just like a teen writing club at your local library, get plugged into something because I think I could have written a much better book much faster if I'd had, support, but also feedback from other people. That's how we learn as writers. Like Zach says, it doesn't have to be this lonely venture. So I would say to get community, and then also to continue, which I did, but I would just emphasize to myself, read the stuff that you want to sound like. Read the books that you admire and the types of book that you're trying to write, and just read them over and over and study them and figure out, how did this author do this? Like, how did he pull off this crazy narration? How did she pull off, this funky structure? And try to really put into words how they did that. And then start practicing those things in your own writing.
Nice. Yeah, I think clearly you didn't get deterred. I'm sure there were moments. There were moments, but clearly that 16-year-old, she had a lot of momentum that she carried with her all the way to today. So tell us how to come and celebrate again behold the stars. What kind of events do you have coming up?
Okay, we have a lot of fun stuff happening in August and September. So the launch party is going to be at Foxtail Bookshop in on Main Street in downtown Woodstock. Sorry, I inhaled some water. Do not recommend. And that I believe is at 2 p.m. on August 8th, which is actually a couple of days before the book technically comes out. But if
So
you
it's like a
go, you get to,
pre-launch.
yes, but you get to get your copy a little bit early. And my dear friend Allie Millington, who wrote Olivetti, which is an amazing best-selling middle grade novel, she'll be doing a little Q&A with me at that event before the signing. So that's going to be a ton of fun. And then the next weekend, we have something at the Reading Attic in Marietta. Then September 12th, I have an event at Damsel Bookstore in Canton at the Mill. And then I have something at the Barnes and Noble Mall of Georgia in September, but we haven't quite settled on a date for that. But it will be on my website, which is jessielatimerbooks.com. If you go to the events tab, I will keep it updated with all the signings and all the interviews and things. So I would love to see everybody there.
Perfect. That was going to be my next question, is how people can keep up with you. So aside from your website, do you have any socials that they can follow?
Yes, I'm on Instagram and TikTok at Jessie Latimer Books. And I'm also on Facebook, but I kind of just repost the stuff that's on Instagram and TikTok.
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been wonderful to learn more about your book and your process and everything in between. I've really appreciated you taking time out of your schedule.
Thank you. I appreciate you too.
And congratulations again.
Thank you so much.